Welcome to With the Wind, Science Revealed. I interview today Nurse Kimberly Overton. She is the founder and director of Nurse Freedom Network and Remnant Nursing. We discuss the impact of these organizations and a really important talk about what it was like for her being in the trenches in the ICU, intensive care unit, when COVID hit. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart, I wanted to talk about silence and the importance of having some silence in your world. For the longest time in my life, everything was go, go, go. There was always music on. The house was full of mostly happy childhood joy, right? We had a house full of kids, but there was never time for silence, time for thoughts, time for spiritual download, time to open up my soul. And I've had the opportunity to do more soul work, and it has blessed my life beyond whatever I might have imagined. You get the opportunity to really work on being peaceful, being calm, having joy be a part of my world, hope, working on forgiveness, and most of all, love. Children need unconditional love. And I think too often, I know for myself as a parent, without knowing it, I was putting conditions on that love. And that's not what they need. We need them to move from I've got you maybe when they're having a rough time to we've got this to you've got this. And we all need this, children and adults. Enjoy silent moments of reflection and make time for them in your world. Welcome, Kimberly Overton. It is so great to have you on the show. I recall with fondness when we were interacting at the conference in Massachusetts.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you came up and said, I'm just a nurse. And it was like, then you were this powerhouse message that you gave. It was like, oh my gosh, I've got to get you on the show. So finally it's happened.
I know. And we're going to have to return the favor because I need you on my show as well.
Happy to do so.
Yes.
You are... This is just a free-for-all show.
That's right.
You are the founder and executive director of the Nurse Freedom Network and Remnant Nursing, which we're going to talk more about. You're a registered nurse from Tennessee. You've been in the healthcare industry for 27 years, and a background in critical care, which is where you were working, I believe, when COVID hit. And then it was July of 2021, you founded the Nurse Freedom Network, which you'll tell us more about. And what you're doing basically is creating opportunities for nurses to break away from the broken sick care system, as many of us call it, and trying to empower nurses to cultivate their own environment. That's so exciting because the medical system is like the military. It's top down. And I've always felt the poor nurses, you take order. It's ridiculous. How would you balance your conscience and your own knowledge and with having to take orders that don't make sense? It put nurses in a really tough position, especially COVID, although in pediatrics, it's been going on for a long time with the vaccine issue. You're a former trustee of the National Coalition of Frontline Workers, and you're a host of a popular radio show, Nurses Out Loud, on America Talks Out Loud. You have a lot to share. I'm looking forward to just having you share. Let's maybe start with your background as what got you into nursing, and then we'll jump to your experience with the pandemic when you were in the ICU.
Sure, absolutely. So I have never wanted to be anything but a nurse. This was my lifelong dream since I was 2 years old. This is all I've ever wanted to do. I'm telling you, I was 2 years old. I got my little Fisher-Price doctor. I actually wanted to be a doctor at first, but then I learned that that was probably not the right route for me. No offense, doc. But I decided early on that this is what I wanted to do. And I ended up having my son early in life. I was 17 when I had my son, so I didn't get to pursue those dreams as I had planned. But what I did was I got into the medical field when I was 19. I worked as a clinical medical assistant for many years. But I decided that I was going to chase down that dream of becoming an RN. So I went back to school later in life, I think when I was about 35, and I finished my degree. So I was a little bit older than the traditional nurses that were out there in the field. But I had
your son at that point was already in his teens.
He was 18.
You saw him all the way through high school.
I did. I was like, let me get him through this. And then when he's grown and he's ready to go off on his own, then I'm going to actually focus on myself. And it was great. It was, everything I imagined it would be and more. So what I like to tell people, I worked really long and hard to become a nurse. So I hope that gives a little bit of weight to what it meant for me to walk away from this career that I loved being a nurse, everything about it. I was working in the ICU. I've only ever worked critical care since I started and was working through the pandemic, directly caring for COVID patients. And I started becoming really uncomfortable with the protocols that they were using, specifically the remdesivir, which we know has been harmful and oftentimes deadly to patients.
Right. Did you experience that yourself? Were patients dying?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. Patients were dying. When I think back about the 18 months that I worked in the ICU, I can think of maybe 3 that survived.
Wow.
Yes.
So this would have been maybe 50 to 100 patients who died?
Oh, yeah, probably more than that. I hate to even think back on it because they were telling us that COVID was killing all of our patients. And in the very beginning, we would just, no matter what we did, despite all of our best efforts, our patients were just not getting any better. And we couldn't understand it. It was really strange time. And then I started to figure out, I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, what's happening? Nobody's dying anywhere else. If the virus alone were killing everybody, then why are we not pulling bodies from homes? Think about our homeless population. Why are we not pulling bodies from the street? The only place that anybody was dying was in our hospitals. So I'm asking these questions and we're looking at things like remdesivir, which the WHO doesn't even recommend using, or at the time it didn't, because they had done massive global studies that showed that it had little to no impact on hospitalized patients. So you had to ask yourself, or I had to ask anyway, why do we continue to use this medication? It's clearly doing more harm than good. We know that it had a decrease in renal function and an increase in mortality.
Yeah.
But we were seeing it given to patients that were already in renal failure.
Wow.
So it was things like that where it was just like, okay, make it make sense. Why are we doing this? Plus, if you understand that remdesivir is an antiviral, then you know that by the time that they're getting to us in the hospitals, they're already well past their replication phase, several days into their symptomatic phase. So it's not going to be effective anyway.
Yeah.
So why are we?
I'm curious. So you're witnessing death after death in what must have seemed futile. What about your peers? Were they also questioning tell me about that.
Some were. I don't think there were nearly enough that were questioning. There was probably a handful that were questioning, but they really weren't speaking up as much, which is unfortunate to me because as nurses, we're hardwired to think critically and to ask questions. And I didn't see a whole lot of that happening, unfortunately. And I don't know if that speaks to the level of indoctrination at the newer nurses that are coming out, or if it's just how big a proponent fear is because people were so afraid. And I think that makes such a big difference. If you think about all of the fear porn that was on the death tolls on the tickers on the TV and on all of that. And it was just a lot of propaganda. And I feel like that really clouded everybody's critical thinking, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think you're right. I've experienced the same thing in my field, pediatrics, where it feels like almost none of my peers have a clue. And it's wow, that the indoctrination and the misinformation that's taken for fact is so pervasive. It's everywhere in the journals, on TV, it's everywhere. So you ended up leaving the bedside. Talk a little bit about what that was like.
Yeah. So I left the bedside because I just couldn't do it anymore. Along with the remdesivir that they were doing, they were also pushing for early intubation, which to me, this was probably the most egregious thing I had ever seen in my nearly 30 years in healthcare, is we are placing these patients on ventilators, and not because they're in respiratory failure. Half of them weren't even in distress. They were placing them on ventilators in an attempt to contain the virus, because if you understand that a ventilator is a closed loop system, so once that patient is placed on that, the virus is no longer disseminated into the air. So they were doing it to contain the virus and to protect the healthcare workers, which against what? To a virus we'd already been exposed to? That didn't make any sense. But to actually do these high-risk interventions, knowing that 80% of the patients that we placed on ventilators never came off of them. And I saw them pushing for this early intubation, and it really just made me sick, because it's not even about the patient in the bed at that point. And that's not what we do.
And you may or may not have been aware at the time, but I'm sure you know now that there was a financial incentive to intubate, and there was a financial incentive for patients to die of COVID.
Exactly. And in the state of Tennessee, and I know that it varies from state to state, but in the state of Tennessee, from the when you get that COVID diagnosis, it basically puts a bounty on your head. Well, you got $266,000 per COVID patient. You get more if they're ventilated. You get even more if they're on that ventilator for 96 hours or longer. Because I was questioning, typically we would see people on vents, maybe 2 days, maybe three. And then we were removing them from the vents, or you would start looking at doing a trach, but that wasn't happening. They were keeping these patients on ventilators for really extended periods of time that we weren't used to seeing at settings that I had never seen. Peeps of 15. We're blowing out the lungs. Yeah. I'm like, well, of course they're dying. I mean, we're giving them remdesivir. We're shutting down their organs. We're blowing out their lungs. We're filling them up with, what did we expect? We're not ambulating these patients. Then they are getting blood clots. They're having strokes. All of these things that were happening. None of these patients were dying of COVID. They were dying of the complete and total medical mismanagement of COVID. And I couldn't watch it any longer. I was so burdened by it. My heart was so burdened by it. To continue to watch that and understand that there's safe and effective treatment available, and knowing that we were denying these patients that option, it became too much. So I walked away. And
you're pretty outspoken. Did you try talking to the attendings where you were working and say, hey, how about ivermectin? How about vitamin D and vitamin C and all those other, quercetin and zinc and all the other things that could be done? Did you try? Yeah.
I did. And I would get a mixed bag of responses from them. Some of them did agree, but they were like, but my hands are tied. It's protocol. That's the only answer we ever get. And I'm like, how did we get here with this is protocol? And especially the ones who knew better. And you have to start asking yourself about these doctors that are calling ivermectin horse paste and just completely demonizing this incredible medication that's been around for decades. We have literally been using this medication for 3 decades safely in humans. Higher safety profile than an aspirin or a Tylenol, but we're demonizing it. And you have to ask yourself, are these doctors just complicit in the lie? Or did they not know any better when they absolutely should? And then you have to wonder which of those scenarios is more frightening to you.
Before we get into your proactive movement forward, I'm just curious because I went through loss of license and needing to sell my practice and that loss of income. How did you manage?
I'm still trying to figure it out because I don't even know how I'm managing at this point. I'll be completely honest with you. I didn't have the financial provisions to do what I did. And I hate to keep saying I'm just a nurse, but we don't make that much.
Yeah.
I had a little bit of savings and I thought, okay, I'm like, I can't. The problem is that I started working from home doing telephone triage nursing, and I thought that was going to be a viable alternative for me. And it was for a while. But then I start becoming uncomfortable. Again, I guess that's a good word, uncomfortable. They wanted me to recommend vaccination for everyone, including children. And then they wanted me to not only recommend them, but to call them safe and effective, period. We literally had a scripted answer that said, if somebody called and said, is the vaccine safe? Should I get it for my child? We were to say, yes, period. It is safe and effective, period. And there's no way we would have known that, first of all, because we had no safety data. So right out of the gate, it doesn't meet the standard for informed consent. So that was not something I was comfortable with. And it wasn't an easy choice to walk away. I'll say that because I get this all the time, and you might get this as well. People say, I wish I could speak out like you have, but I have a mortgage to pay. And I have bills to pay. I have all of those things too.
Yeah, we do.
I really get frustrated when I hear that. But to me, it wasn't an easy choice to make, but it was a clear one. I couldn't sleep at night recommending this vaccine and encouraging people to get it. The best I would say was, we just don't have the data to know. And in children especially, I would never have recommended it in children because they had a 99.9815% of survival.
Yeah,
this should be criminal, what they're doing.
Yeah, and it's now on the childhood schedule, which is horrifying. Yeah, absolutely horrifying. So you started the Nurse Freedom Network. Tell us about that, how you got started and what it is. And if I'm a nurse out there and I'm hearing you talk, I want to know, is this for me? How can I get involved? What is it? What's going on?
So I started a Nurse Freedom Network back in July of 2021 and did that just to take a stand against the unconstitutional mandates that were coming on. But beyond the advocacy portion of it, I really wanted to create these opportunities for nurses. So alongside of our 501c3, we created a 508c1a private membership association. So we started that as a means to provide services to our patients. And the structure is in such a way that when we know eventually, as they did with you, coming for your license, we're able to legally practice our profession under this private membership association, which has been fantastic. So I call it like training wheels for nurses. Many nurses don't realize that they don't have to be a hospital employee, that they can do something else and provide care in a meaningful way. So we offer micro-franchising opportunities. They're very affordable. It's $1,500 to buy into our platform. They can see patients. We provide them with all of the resources that they need with their client base and with the access to our electronic health records as well.
Is this what remnant nursing is?
Correct.
Okay. Maybe just briefly describe what a PMA is, because even as a doctor, I looked at that model and Oregon was just looking at me, scrutinizing every move I made. I ended up shying away from it, even though I was really close to implementing it. But for our listeners, maybe just a brief description of what a PMA is and how it protects you.
Sure. So it's a private membership association. It is our constitutionally guaranteed right to private contract. So it's between myself and if you are my member, then you are accepting my advice. So it's more like you're in a family versus in the public domain. Everything is completely private. So it just takes away the jurisdiction of the federal government, of the state and local authorities. The right is not absolute, but you would have to be absolutely working in the realm of a clear and present danger of a substantive evil in order for it to even trigger an investigation. So basically, your members are agreeing to take your advice. They agree that they cannot sue you. You cannot sue your members. And it offers that level of protection. Could you be sued? Sure. Anybody can sue anybody, but it's very likely not going to stick unless you're operating in that substantive evil realm, which I don't think any of us would be.
So it'd be like if I wanted to get some advice from you, I become a member of kind of your family, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It'd almost be like I'm coming over to your house, we're chatting over dinner, and you're telling me some things about maybe ivermectin, I don't know, whatever it might be, that you've learned some things that can be helpful for people.
Exactly. And my member trusts my education. Now, maybe they take my license away, but my member knows that I'm well-educated and have experience, same as you. You don't have your license any longer, but you're well-educated. You have many years of experience, and they trust that. So they're willing to take that advice, whether you're licensed or not, is of no concern to them. So, yeah. And we do all of our practitioners are still licensed for whatever that's worth these days. But we do have, and it is worth, we do sometimes have practitioners that need to prescribe medication. So in that realm, it does help. But we tend to shy away from pharmaceutical use as much as possible. We do have ivermectin available, hydroxychloroquine that we're able to send. And we use a lot of very natural treatments and more holistic modalities than just to write the prescription and send patients on their way. We're not about that. We're very much about digging into the root cause of what's going on and finding the problem, identifying the problem, and eradicating it versus symptom management.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So we've got, it's wintertime, right? It's January. It's the height of the flu, RSV. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a new COVID wave, the trifecta, they say.
Yep.
I imagine your organization is able to provide support and help for people who are struggling with those sort of infections.
Absolutely. Yes. We do have prescribing practitioners if that's necessary. We have a lot of protocols that I even hate that word. I hate the word protocols, but I don't know what else to call it. I call them individualized wellness plans. And we're going to focus on getting people through these acute situations. Absolutely. And I think another thing that we do provide, aside from the health and the wellness portion, is we provide advocacy services. And I think if COVID showed us anything, it is that there is value in having a medical advocate and somebody who knows how to effectively communicate with a patient care team. I tell people all the time, and as a nurse, I never thought I would be saying this, but stay away from the hospitals. They are not safe places anymore. Like I said earlier, when you go in and you test positive, first of all, stop testing. Stop testing for COVID. Stop. Stop the insanity. If you're sick, treat. The test means nothing. But what I don't understand is the people going in, they have this bounty on their head when they test positive. It's not safe. It is so important. And I think as more and more people wake up, they start to realize that they are safer at home with the nurse than they are going to the hospital. And that we are also been able to place nurses in the homes with patients. Maybe they need some supportive care, some oxygen, where we're able to get them hooked up with an oxygen concentrator, maybe some IV fluids and just somebody there to assist with their ADLs. And then if it escalates to a point where they need to be admitted, guess what? Our nurse goes right there with them. And now they have an advocate at their side throughout the admission. And as I watch so many of my patients needlessly die, I can tell you that there's a lot of value in having that advocate in place. And like I always say, don't wait until that situation happens. You've got to have an advocacy plan before we get there. So it's $30 a month to join our organization. And that is, I always encourage people join, become a member, do their consultation with our nurse and get all of your information. Now we have all of your history. We have all of your medications and we're ready to go to bat for you if and when that emergency situation happens.
That's awesome. We teach the same thing for pediatric vaccines. If you're going into your pediatric office and it's a standard office, which most are, you're going to be pressured, incredible pressure to vaccinate. And you need an advocate with you by your side so you can't be bullied. You can go stand your ground about what you want and what you don't want. I'm curious, with your particular organization, and before we're done, you can share the how people can find you. Are you covering all 50 states or do you just have a
global
network?
No, we're
global.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so we'll take nurses and clients from around the globe. Yeah.
That's phenomenal. And you're offering a franchise opportunity, which I think is unique and
it's a very unique model.
Yeah, it's especially just, I feel like it's awesome because if I'm even in myself, I could probably join your franchise operation.
I would love it if you would join our franchise and you could start seeing consults. Because again, it's not about, and I hate to say this about pediatricians because I have a great love for, I actually wanted to be a pediatrician when I was little. Remember, I told you I wanted to be a doc. I wanted to be a pediatrician. So I've always had a great love for that field. But it seems like it's become nothing more than pushing jabs, right?
Yep.
Is that all, what else are pediatricians doing? And I hate to say that because there are some really fantastic pediatricians out there. But we can weigh and measure the baby's milestones all on our own, right? And
sure.
Then go to a family doctor if we're sick. But most of these doctors are just pushing vaccines and nothing at their wellness visit.
Yeah.
They're all financially incentivized to do it.
Oh, huge financial incentives. I was a board certified pediatrician for 30 years and childcare was over 50% of our business.
Yep.
And then the other half of it's sick kids. You're writing prescriptions for antibiotics for things that probably most of the time don't need antibiotics.
Yep.
You're destroying the gut biome. So they're getting sicker and sicker. And then you're dealing
with... And it was probably caused by the vaccine to begin with because we're destroying the immune system.
And the Tylenol that's pushed and the antibiotics that are destroying the biome. It's just a mess. And
it's so sick of all of it.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be that way. Folks, if you're listening, if you happen to have kids, just get active in figuring out what is really going on so that you can have healthy children. Chronic disease in children is just skyrocketed, right? It's like absolutely insane. It doesn't need to be that way. So yeah, I'm passionate about that. I know you are too.
Yep.
So the system's broken, right? And you're touching on how we can fix it. Do you have any other thoughts?
I don't know that I really feel like the system's completely broken. It's completely unsustainable. And people hate when I say this, but I really feel like it needs to burn to the ground. But we do have to be able to build up something alongside of it that will offer this true patient-centered care. I think it's very important, though, that people remain vigilant about, because you're going to see a lot of people coming out that are, it's very opportunistic, right? They see the distrust in the medical field. And they're like, oh, I'm over here and I'm outside of the system, but are they really? You'll see a lot of these direct care primary, which I think is a fantastic model and definitely the way medicine needs to go. but a lot of them are still accepting insurance. If you're still accepting insurance, Medicare specifically, then you are still beholden to all of those CMS guidelines. So you're not outside of the system if you're taking Medicare. You're just not.
Yeah, that issue is tricky. So in my practice, we were serving most of the time 15,000 active patients. And I would say 90 to 95% of them were dependent on their insurance. Yeah. So to go private model, which would have been in many ways so much better, because you're right, you're trying to meet all these different quality measures, which involves unnecessary visits and pushing the vaccines, which we weren't doing, but still the pressure's there, right? To follow all those guidelines. How do we get the majority of the population that's stuck in the insurance model off of that model and willing to pay? It's so interesting to me. You'll pay a fortune for your pets to go to a vet, but you won't pay for your children to get proper good care.
Exactly. I think 90% of it is education and changing the mindset. That's the biggest battle that we're facing, is that we're so conditioned to think that this insurance is the only model, that I have this health insurance. Do you have coverage or do you have a card? I think in many cases, all you have is a card. If you think about, I think insurance is the biggest Ponzi scheme there ever was, right? At the end of the day, you've paid out all of your premiums, and then you have your deductible, and then you have your co-pays. And at the end of the day, what do you get? You go into your doctor, you've probably taken an entire day off of work and lost a day's pay to sit there. And at the end of the day, you might get out with a prescription that you have 5 minutes with the doc and a prescription that's probably going to cause you 10 more problems. We could just, again, change that mindset. And it's all about prioritizing our healthcare. You're either going to pay for your health a little bit now, or you're going to pay for it later with disease and despair. And I really think it's about changing that mindset. Listen, my organization membership is $30 a month. Most of us pay more than that for our streaming services every month.
That's a very good point. And with that, you're getting advice, and you're also getting, when you need it, advocacy.
Yep. And there's another thing that we do as well, is there's a lot of concern, and I don't think enough people are talking about this, is that with so much of the population being vaccinated with the mRNA spike protein, we've completely tainted our blood supply in this country, and not enough people are talking about that. But so we do partner with an organization called Pure Blood Registry. So we are able to help procure clean and unvaccinated blood, and we advocate for directed donation. We have a 100% success rate for our clients with getting them that directed donation.
Wow. So that's a reality now?
It is.
I had read about that, but I didn't realize it was a reality in the U.S.
Yes. So it's not a blood bank, but it's a network of unvaccinated donors who can connect you with. And we, you know, direct the donation, as you know, your physician, as you know, that this is not anything new, but they will push back on this directed donation at every turn. So it's so important that you have somebody that understands the complexities of the system and how to push forward. But we've had great success with it.
That is phenomenal. Before I bring Didi on, I always like to give the person I'm interviewing a chance to just, what's the most important thing you want people to take from this chat that we're having? And then also how people can reach you.
The most important thing that I like to tell people is make sure, again, that you have a plan in place. If it's not my organization, just make sure you have a plan. There are others out there, but make sure that you have a plan for an advocate, because nobody thinks that they need an advocate until they do. And then many times it's too late. You're behind the eight ball. Get a plan in place. Become a member. It's $30 a month. And even if you don't need our services now, when you do need us, we're going to be right there to serve you and well-equipped to be able to handle your case if we have all of your information and we're not scrambling. And those emergency situations, many times, time is of the essence. So it's really important to be prepared. We have an incredible team of nurses that can make a real difference for you in this type of situation. As I mentioned earlier, it truly can be the difference between life and death. So if you are interested in becoming a member, if you're a nurse who's interested, or a doctor, any healthcare provider, we're looking for all of these different ancillary positions as well. We are having a information session Friday, the 12th, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I don't know when this will air, but Friday at 7 p.m., you can come on and learn about our PMA and everything that we have to offer. And you can find us at remnantnursing.org, and you can contact us through that website as well.
So I know you, part of this is your 501c, it's a nonprofit where people can donate. Is that also at Remnant Nursing?
And Nurse Freedom Network. So the 501c3 is nursefreedomnetwork.org. And we do accept, we gratefully accept donations because we don't have any financial backing at all. Nothing. And which I'm actually proud of that because we've been able to look at where, how far we have come with nothing, literally from vapor, vapor. But we've been able to build this without the edicts of people who are going to place profits over patients. Nobody interferes with the care that we provide.
Yeah. Well, Kimberly, thank you. You are actually doing what so many people are calling for, and that is the creation of a parallel system. Obviously, it's not complete. We still have to resolve those of us who are in the same mission, which there are several of us, many of us in the country. When you get to that, and you're a critical care nurse, this, there will always be a small percentage of people who end up needing critical care. Where are they going to go where they can get safe care? And, right. and as you pointed out, the hospitals aren't safe anymore. But at least you have an interim solution to that, which is the advocate. I love that. And I know there are people working on actually developing a parallel hospital system as well.
I cannot wait for the day. I can't. I'm taking on the nursing portion of it, but I don't want to take on the whole thing.
Yeah.
Let's go. Like I said, there's people out there with resources. We don't have them here, but
yeah. And ICU nurses are critical for a functional critical care unit. You guys do all the work. The doctors just zip in and out, and it's the nurses right at the bedside doing the life saving care minute to minute. So yeah, we need to create a safe environment for that. Absolutely. Thank you again so much. And I'm gonna have Dee Dee have some woman to woman personal time.
I love Dee Dee. Let's do it.
Hello, Nurse Kimberly. Thank you for joining me on With the Wind. I am so excited to be talking to you. I've been trying forever to get you on our show. So I'm so happy that it happened. First thing I want to talk about is when I met you, it was in Boston. And when you started off your speech, you had just said, I'm just a nurse. And so many people were like, oh my gosh, no, you're so much more than that, all of that. And I'm just a mom. And that's my title on our book. That's my title on a lot of things. Because in this freedom movement, we all take like a major role. And for me, it's been supporting moms because I'm a mom. I'm not a nurse. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an educator as far as medical goes or any of that. I'm just a mom who really cares. And I saw in you that day and listening to you talk that, yes, you're a mom. Yes, I don't know if you're married or not or any of those other things. But first and foremost in this movement, you are a nurse and you are a nurse that's making a huge difference. So I have no problem with you saying just a nurse. Own it though, because when you say it, you're like, oh, I know I shouldn't. No, you're just a nurse and I'm just a mom. So
well, it's true. I will, and I say often that degrees don't equate to intelligence. Education even doesn't, it doesn't equate to intelligence because I know plenty of nurses who have more knowledge than some doctors. And I know many moms who have more knowledge than some nurses, myself included. I don't like to say, oh, you're not a doctor. You're not a nurse. You're not whatever. It doesn't matter. Do you have the knowledge? And many moms have far more knowledge than many nurses. As we talk about vaccines, many people don't realize that the only education that we receive as nurses is safe, effective, and necessary. That's right. It. Doctors receive a little more than that.
I don't think they receive much more than that, though. I think that is because Dr. Paul's talked about that, too. And the point of that, now that you brought that up, is that if we just say that, as long as you say something long enough, it becomes a truth, right? It becomes somebody's truth. And it becomes, that's the thing, is the moms are the ones that I think figure that out first and foremost, is because it's their child that's having the reaction in their home that they deal with. So I think that that's part of that. That's why people... Like we just listened to RFK the other day and he had made a comment that it's the moms that really shifted and made him aware of so many things. So for you, getting back on track, you being a nurse, critical care, right in there, that's when you're seeing everything. So thank God there was something inside of you that was like, wow, I can't do this. How many children do you have?
I just have one. He's grown. He'll be 30 this year, which is unbelievable to me. But yes.
Wow, mine's only 24.
Yes.
Dr. Ball has a ton of children. His are like really old. Are you married?
I'm not married any longer. No.
Good for you.
Yes.
Makes it makes it fun. You can be out there. Probably exactly. Not your focus right now, but.
Yeah, no, not my focus. Who wants to deal with this? Let me tell you.
If you could go back in time, what would you change? Would you be a nurse knowing what you know now? And if you had known that, wow, there's going to be this point in time where I'm really going to need to know blah, 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 would you have done things differently?
No, I wouldn't do a single thing differently. I believe truly that I was called for such a time as this to be a nurse. And I talk about a lot. I've written many articles about this, about how I'm really mourning my career. Again, this is something I've wanted to do my whole life. And I was so happy and loved everything about being a nurse. And then it was like grieving a loss of this ideal that I had in my head about what nursing meant and what it meant to be a nurse. And walking away from the bedside, a lot of people will tell you that you're not a real nurse anymore because you're not at the bedside. But I think that when we're able to stand in the gap and really protect our patients and understand that no matter where we are, if we're at the bedside, if I'm sitting here and doing the work I'm doing now, in many cases, as a nurse, we are their last line of defense. We need to be giving them information and empowering them with that information and education. And to me, that's the purest form of nursing, is to be able to stand in the gap and protect these patients at all costs, because we are, in many cases, their last line of defense.
Hmm. Yeah, it's funny. It brought back a memory of, like, when you talk about being a nurse, I always thought that nurses, and my son, when he was younger, to him, the nurse was the person that made the doctor not so scary. And so when he had to have blood drawn every single week when he was younger for an issue, and so he called the nurse that took his blood every week the blood doctor. And it's so funny because we say, okay, a nurse is here and a doctor's here due to education or whatever it is, but that's changing. There are so many people now, nurse practitioners and different levels of that care, right? And no matter where you are, you're still doing something for people. All the work you're doing is so powerful. What is the saddest part for you about what's happening with COVID and what happened to you being a nurse and trying to make a difference? What hurts your heart the most?
Just, I think that we can't reach everybody. We want to. And seeing people who aren't awake and aware to what's going on. And I try to understand, like, there was a time, I try to meet people where they're at, because there was a time when I wasn't awake and aware to what was happening. I was part of the problem. Just 4 years ago, I was saying, get vaccinated, not with the COVID vaccine, but I was like, get your flu shot, because I thought that this was what I was supposed to be doing as a nurse. So I was part of the problem without even realizing it. And to me, that is one of the saddest parts, is that the nurses are so well-intentioned, but this system, the way that it's designed, it uses its well-intentioned nurses in order to carry out these types of just horrific crimes. They are crimes against humanity. And the system has used their nurses in this way. And to me, it's absolutely horrific. When we talk about what happened during COVID and how these patients were dying, and I'm telling people they're not dying from COVID. Mm-hmm. They're dying in a hospital holocaust. That's what's happening. People don't understand when I say this, but the ventilators are the new gas chambers.
I think more and more people are, and there's so many that have died in the hospital due to that, that I think and that's what's important. And part of what the WIND's mission is to show that, hey, these things are real. Here's a real nurse that did real work, that saw things that wasn't okay. And you made a difference. You made a choice to just do what's going to help people and do what works, versus just being told what you're supposed to do. When there is such a high level of evil, whatever you want to call it, that's happening, that keeps other things. I don't even like saying the truth. The bottom line is, there's other ways to treat COVID. There's other ways to live life. There's ways we can do things without causing all the risk and the damage and the chronic conditions. So being a nurse now, where you are doing what you're doing, what's your favorite part?
My favorite part is being able to really make connections for people, create these opportunities for these other nurses who are ready to come away from this system. They're so beat down by the years of abuse. Really, it's like being in a narcissistic, abusive relationship with the healthcare system. It's the same exact thing. And we're gaslit constantly. And I love being able to see these nurses come together and really forge ahead on their own and stop begging for change. We have been begging for change for decades, right? These problems, like, this is not unique to COVID. We've been dealing with issues with safe staffing, and our compensation is horrific to the, compared to the work that we do. There are so many issues that have plagued our profession for decades, and we keep on protesting and going and begging for change. It's never coming. So to me, the most satisfying thing is seeing people wake up to that fact and understand that they don't need to beg any longer. They can seriously come on board and forge their own path forward and really provide care for people in a meaningful way, which is why we become nurses in, to begin with.
That's so awesome. And you're the nurse's nurse. You're the nurse coach Kimberly. And you've done it and you've been there, and to be able to support and help other people, that is so important. I heard you talk a lot about the membership and the $30 and what they get for that. What would you share with somebody who maybe wants to be a part of this, but they honestly cannot afford the $30 a month? They're single parents. They're doing whatever they're doing. They hate that they have to rely on their own insurance or do their own thing. But what do you say to those people who aren't able to be a part of this program? What can they do for themselves to not have to go to the doctors or to find information to keep them out of the doctor's office? What's your suggestion for those people?
Yeah, I think it's really important. And again, it really goes back to finding ways to prioritize. Many people have their, like I said earlier, their streaming services are $30 a month or even more than that sometimes. And I think it really comes down to prioritizing and understanding. I would do every bit of this for free if I could. And I've had people reach out, and it's been really, it's always very difficult for me to say, listen, we are just not set up to be able to provide free services for people,
right?
Because we have no funding. I've got to be able to pay these nurses who are in many times walking away from careers. I still haven't figured out how to pay myself, but my nurses get paid. But I think the most important thing is there's great educational resources out there. I do put quite a bit of information out for free, like on my Substack, which you don't have to pay to become a member of. So find sources that you can trust. And we provide as much information and education as we can without, obviously, I don't like to make recommendations as far as what medications to take and things like that without actually going
right
and digging into somebody's medical history. I know some people do that. I don't feel comfortable with it.
And because, you shouldn't.
Yeah, because healthcare is not one size fits all. So yeah. I don't want to say everybody get on like these three or four medications and you'll be perfect and you'll be fine. We don't. No, I don't know what your medical history is, and I'm not telling you to take anything until I do.
And it's not even about medications. I think that's the thing, is people do want to be healthier, and it sounds like your program is a great way for somebody, if they have that, to connect and find out what supplements can I be taking for preventative or all of that. So I didn't know. I've just heard of some websites that have some of that on there. And if you have that, then the upside to that is the people who truly can't afford, because I know of several moms, there's no TV in the house. There are no streaming services. They don't go to Starbucks. They are doing everything they can to keep food on the table. So those are the people that, again, they have to go to the doctor because they're part of the state health programs. They don't even, if you have a resource, like that's what I was reaching for. So that then at some point, if people can afford it, then it is you they're going to come to. But that was kind of the point.
Yeah, and I'm hopeful that, like I said, we do put things out on the Substack, and we try to put as much education and free things out there. That's why I don't paywall any of my content on my Substack. We have an option to, if you can pay and support, that's fantastic, but I don't put anything behind a paywall because I want to make sure that we're getting that out there to the people who need that information. I'm also looking at doing something to where we have scholarships and sponsorships, so people with donations where they can donate a membership for somebody who maybe can't afford it. So those are things that we're looking at, and it's always evolving. We need to find ways, because unfortunately, and I think Dr. Paul alluded to this earlier, we're cutting out our most vulnerable populations, as you just said, when we are going to this direct care model that's necessary. It's 100% necessary, but we are cutting out our most vulnerable population, our low-income families, and our elderly population, and that's a problem. So I think that what we need is more people we don't have the resources. I wish we did. But there are people out there that do. So if you have the resources, please support the work that we're doing or the work that other organizations are doing. I feel like we have a lot of doers, and then we have people that kind of sit back and wish that they could do something. And I feel like we have to marry the resources with the doers, right? Because it doesn't seem like they're ever in the same category. So if we can get the people with the resources working with the people who take action, there's no stopping what we can do to really provide true patient care for people.
Thank you so much. And thanks for saying that. So I'm just going to point out some personal things. You're young. You're gorgeous. First of all, I don't know how you have a 30-year-old son. People must think that you're like his girlfriend or something if you're somewhere together.
Yeah, we're at that awkward place.
You're young. You're motivated. You're educated. You have all these things going on. Are you single?
I am.
Okay, what dating site are you on? Because I know everybody watching is going to want to date you. You're so awesome.
It's so funny. So I actually just got on, I'm not for dating purposes. I actually don't date. I hate dating. Let me tell you how I hate dating.
That's why you have to be on a website.
I don't know. I hate that too. So I got on Unjected, but I didn't do it for dating purposes. But now my inbox is full of people that are like, I'm like, listen, I don't have time because I don't want to be that person. I'm like, you don't understand. I have all of this stuff going on, but I'm not that type of person. I hate the process of dating where it's you're trying to get to know people are never themselves. They're always acting a certain way. I always call dating, it's like the act of pretending to be someone you're not until you find someone willing to love you for who you are. And I don't want to do all that. I still have time. I cannot waste my finite time with that. For me, it's going to be something that everybody's, you'll get friend zoned, whatever. Friend zone. Come on with the friend zone. Like, it's going to be something that grows organically from a friendship. If it doesn't start with the friendship, then it's not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere with the intention of no.
And you just said it. And I think that's the word you just used, organically, whether it's in relationships or healthcare or anything else. We have to get back to that. Again, just that piece of really being real in who we are. And I see great things for you in the future, Missy. Keep doing what you're doing and feel free to reach out to us if you ever need any support. And on this show, we'll have the pop-ups and the things with all the resources for people to be able to reach out to her, to Kimberly.
Can I mention one thing before we end?
Nope. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I can't believe I forgot about this. So we have this event coming up. It's called Next Steps for Nurses. So it's part of the broader Next Steps conferences. It's going to be in Buford, Georgia at Lake Lanier Island Resorts. It's a fantastic opportunity. Tia Severino's the organizer of that. She puts on a fantastic event, and it's all about solution. It's going to be March 14th through the 17th. And again, it's Buford, Georgia. You can go to next-steps.info. For more information, tickets are on sale for that. And there is many sponsorship opportunities available. We are going to be doing the Next Steps for Nurses portion on the 17th. So we want any of these nurses, doctors, healthcare workers who are interested in learning more about the parallel system and these educational and entrepreneurial opportunities that we provide. I may not have mentioned that earlier, but we also provide educational opportunities for nurses at deeply discounted rates. They all get trained in functional medicine, homeopathy, IV therapies. So much opportunity is here waiting for these nurses to come out of the system.
That's awesome. I have a question though, because we do have a lot of nurses that we interview that have been on the show that are just out there and watching us also. To take those classes and do those things, do you have to have a nursing license? Do you have to be licensed in a state to do those things?
No.
To learn those?
No. We offer a homeopathy to unlicensed personnel. There is the functional medicine, I think. She does some of it there's two versions of the course, and she does some of it without that. You don't have to be licensed in order to do it.
Okay. And then again, any nurses that are out there watching, I would definitely encourage you to connect with Kimberly's programs and learn more if you're stuck in that situation. Your show will be out before that event, but close. Get it on your Substack. Make sure we see it. We'll share it on our Substack and get the information out there, because I do think those kind of events are really critical to our future. In healthcare.
Absolutely. And if you guys can come, we would love to have you. Good play, sister.
Thanks for joining us, Kimberly. You're amazing. And I'm really looking forward to seeing all the things you do in the future.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Dee Dee.
Hey, Hey, everyone. It's me, Dee Dee. And today I want to speak to you from my soul about passion. After listening to and being able to interview Kimberly Overton, I realize how important it is when someone's going through something like she did, that you take that passion from your soul and you use it. You get out there, you fight, you do what's best. That's what so much of our show is about. So much of everything we do as freedom people fighting for what's best for us, that comes from our soul. That passion is deep. And sometimes all of the human things around us stop us from really being able to focus in on that passion. But that's why I was just thinking today after listening to Dr. Paul's From the Heart, silence. Be silent. Listen to your soul. It doesn't talk as loud as those little voices in our head telling us all the things to do. The soul has a quieter space that it lives in. So we get down deep, we be silent, and we think about what are we holding in our soul? What needs to happen? What are we passionate about? And what can we do about it? Thanks for watching.
I look forward to running together with the wind at our backs, revealing the science that gives clarity in our world that's full of propaganda and misinformation. Visit our website, doctorsinscience.com. Sign up. Donate if you can. Your support makes a difference. And let's make this the weekly show the world has been waiting for. Thanks for watching. I'm Dr. Paul.